Hello, and welcome to recording number 38 of Gary Gygax's Saga of Old City, an annotated reading. Today is July 19th, 2021. To recap where we were, Gord is on his way to Relmord with Chert and Geller and Curly Greenleaf. They have just fought the Battle of Woodford, and they're back in the Thorp that they in the Adri Forest, and where Gord was talking with Curly Greenleaf about the philosophy of neutrality, and was reflecting on some various things about alignment. And Gygax was able to show alignment in a way that is a philosophy, so that, you know, he's taking the game mechanic of alignment and he's making it an actual philosophy that is in the setting itself, so that they're not talking gamey stuff where, you know, there's about the, you know, like lawful good and, you know, chaotic evil. What they're saying is that Curly Greenleaf, the druid, is a believer in the way of neutrality, and Gord doesn't really believe that he's actually following true neutrality, but he has various biases that are just, you know, he's not really seeing. But rather than get into an argument and over it, Gygax has Gord just go along with what Geller was saying. And it's a kind of a lesson, I guess, we can all learn from our interactions on the internet. All right, so I'm going to start here today on page 280, paragraph 2. Information from Curly regarding the arcane business of invocation of unknown forces and energies interested Gord far more than talk of world views and philosophies. His days as a student had gained him much knowledge in many fields, but he knew very little of spellcasting and associated arts. While Curly Greenleaf did not actually instruct him in the secrets of druidical demon crafting, he did explain much of the theory and practice of the arts and disciplines involved not only with his, but also clerical and magical spells as well. Break. And that is Gord getting a quick, because it's, I believe, only a single day, a quick overview of, magical and clerical magics. And in this setting, things like clerical magic seems to be a little more common than magic users, and it is seemingly very, very little at the lower levels. Gord has encountered very little of magic.
We had a little with the Rennie.
Yes, and some spellcasters right from the beginning. I don't know if he actually interacted with them, though.
No, I don't think so.
Back in the Beggar Union, Thieves Guild War.
Very little, though.
Yeah. And then... are you... I'm sorry.
I'm not scratching.
Are you hearing some interference here?
It here sounds like scratching or something.
Yeah. Okay.
Better.
All right. Okay. That is a big thing with the book, is that Gygax's version of the setting, that is very much shows a slightly different campaign than the way the setting has been expressed. It's a lot. There's some more kind of adult themes or you know, maybe a little more graphic and grim than you'd normally find. And you have things, the value of gold is, you know, different. And there is a much less, you know, talk of magic weapons and of, you know, spell casting at the beginning. So like the beginning with Gord, it is mostly, it's mostly thievery and some fighting. And it is a book from the thief's point of view. All right, I'm going to restart. It's page 280, paragraph 3. Gord thought that such lore would be most useful in understanding the workings of magical protections and devices, as well as to measure the potential of an adversary. He candidly told Curly this, and the druid laughed and accepted this observation, for his own philosophy and theology demanded such. Knowledge was part of the necessary whole, after all. So the days rolled into weeks, and then Geller returned again. He came to see his friends, and for no other purpose, he said. After the battle, he had gone to the Blimu Hills, where King Archbold held court in Dunstan's castle. Afterward, with all necessary business there accomplished, he had paid his respects to the Gnome King in the Flinty Hills once again, and then come back to this place in the Adri. So break. So here we're showing Geller, who is, you know, serves several different crowns. You know, he's I believe he's supposed to be related to the House of Geller of Ernst, the Duchy and County of Ernst. He acts as a spy for Archibald of Nyrond. He's a thief in Stoink, which, you know, he serves Stoink, but he's serving Stoink to serve Archibald Nyrond and the Ernst. So here, Geller, you know, is off, and he sees that Archibald is now set up in the Blemu Hills. And Dunstan's castle. So I think this may be where we had noticed that on the map, Blemu Castle is being shown, you know, far away from Nurl. And then in the book, that Blemu Castle is supposedly right by Nurl. That's where Gord is being held. So this may be the point where there was some confusion, because I believe the Blemu Hills are much further north of Nurl. And so I wonder if there is a some kind of fortification there. But it does seem odd at this point that Archibald, and they're referring to the Blemu Hills and Dunstan's castle. So I really think there may be a bit of confusion here on Gygax's part, so that you do have these two locations for where Blemu Castle is located. And then he's back into visiting the Gnome King again, and he seems to have a very good relation with the Gnome King of the Flinty Hills. And the Gnome King, you know, is a major power in the area, you know, having resisted the destruction of the Bone March and the invasion of the humanoids, and who is actually providing a good number of troops to fight off the humanoids in out of the Bone March, and increasing the, you know, the area that is under control of either Archibald or Dunstan. All right, I'm going to restart. It's page 280 and the final paragraph. Geller asked if Gord still cared to accompany him to Rel Mord, as the two had once planned. Gord eagerly accepted the invitation, although he subsequently had mild reservations about leaving. Geralt by now also was desirous of broadening his horizons, for he and the Amazonian Wren had come to a parting of the ways, mainly due to the mighty feud barbarian's lack of interest in family life. The situation was uncomfortable, and a trip to a distant place was indeed a bright prospect under such circumstances. Gord thought the idea of a group journey to Relmord grand, as did Curly Greenleaf, who planned on traveling in that direction anyway, having druidical business of some sort in the distant Celadon forest, west and south of Nyron's capital city. So after the rough farewells and the rude adieus customary to a leave-taking between forest folk, the four adventurers rode out of Stalker's Thorpe. Gord and Geller still had the horses they had received from Dunstan. Greenleaf and the big barbarian were mounted on steeds of questionable worth, but ones that could be traded for more suitable animals at Innspa. Gord wore a short shirt of mail of such fine workmanship and lightness that it was undetectable beneath his outer garments. Greenleaf said it was chainmail of elfin make, and Gord was fortunate that he was of a size to be able to don it. The armor had come to him as part of the spoils of war, just as had Church broadsword, shield, and helmet and mount. The four stayed only briefly within the town of Innspa, and with new horses under their companions, Gord and Geller rode slightly ahead of the barbarian and the druid on the long highway running westward to Relmord. As the flinty hills slowly became a dim line on the horizon to his rear, Gord spoke to his companions. "If you should ever see Evely again in your travels, Geller, will you tell her that I helped to assure the safety of her father's fiefdom, and that of her husband's Palatine barony as well?" The one-eyed man looked at his young friend for a long moment, weighing the statement. "Yes, Gord, I will assuredly tell your Evely that, should a private moment to do so ever present itself." Satisfied, Gord nodded and rode on, whistling a little tune. Break. All right, so, you can see that there's a map, the Darlene map, is up in the Fiction Channel, and you can see that the rough, drawings of, locations on these very broad, I was wrong, each one of these hexes is 10 leagues, 30 miles on the Darlene map. So, it is a journey of, 90, 180, 300, 400 miles over from Innspa to Relmord. You get the feeling in this little bit section right here that Gord is ending a chapter with his last words here to Evely, or, this kind of parting adieu here to Evely. We don't get much more information about locales, and we don't get a name of Stalker's Thorpe. I mean, I suppose that could be the name of the little location. pardon me. And it's commented that is Gord's wedding present to Evely, helping to... I see on the Darlene map that the Blemmu Hills, the Blemmu Hills are north of Nurl, and, on the Darlene map, things are very, they tried to do the hexes so that, if it's a hilly hex, the whole hex shows, hills, and if the proportion is greater for open terrain, it shows green, and if it's forest, the whole hex shows forest. So it is possible that the rise in that the area around Nurl itself could be considered part of the Blemmu Hills. But on a closer examination of the map, it really does seem more as if it is on the harp at the junction of the harp and the teaser torrent. All right. So we don't have much more here, except, you know, both Gord and Chert here have received loot, and Gord has another item of magic to add to his, you know, various assembly of things that he's gotten, starting with, a lot of this parting gifts from Evely and from Dunstan to make up for Gord's imprisonment. So Gord now has a magic necklace that will keep him from detection of location. He's got his long tooth dagger. He's got a short sword of various abilities, but also enable another weapon that can pierce through armor, including magical armor, I believe.
Dragon scales, I think.
Dragon scale, that's right. And he's now got elven chain. I believe that the armor he received from Dunstan itself seemed like it might have been a kind of magical leather armor. And as a thief, I believe that in the game mechanics, that the elven armor is one of the chainmail is so light that it does not impede a thief's dexterity. So it's one of the magical armors at a lower level that a thief can wear. A metal armor rather than being in a more pliant kind of leather or studded leather armor.
Yeah, one of the disadvantages of metal for a thief is the noise that it might make when you were trying to be stealthy.
Yes, and I'm not sure, but I believe elven armor, does have that ability that its lightness is undetectable, you know, according to Gygax here, but I also believe that it is, does not make the noise of normal metal links, you know.
So he wouldn't suffer a penalty or anything.
Yeah, in game mechanics. And I'm sure that's going to be carried over into the story. But, you know, like Gord is, he's gotten raised up to past in game terms. I think he's past mid-level already and headed toward high level or at lower high level already, which is, you know, like 8th, 9th, 10th level. Curly Greenleaf as a druid is 10th level. We don't know what Geller or Chert are, but I assume that this is a pretty much an equal party of that kind of level. So, you know, in game we're talking about them moving from, say, you know, like at first the Hamlet beginner kind of stuff, and then through like what the A series would be with going up against the slave lords, and reaching the point that they could be among a party going against the giants in the G module series. So, you know, we should expect at this point, if there is a group that they're going to be encountering, bigger monsters, more dangerous foes and such. Yeah, and here is a listing of armor posted to the Greyhawk Fiction, that armor and weapons by class, the class of character and what they can wear. And, a thief in first edition, Elven Chain isn't named, but I believe I've read it that Elven Chain could be used, or maybe that's just the kind of thing that I, you know, threw on. It is something that DMs do just allow. I believe that was the nature of elven armor, boots of elven kind. They really were very thief-like, weapons. Armor or things, or magical items, elven cloaks, elven boots, and this elven chain. All right. I'm going to restart, and it is page number 281 and the final paragraph. The journey to Relmord took just a little over a fortnight to accomplish, for they did not ride hard. During the course of the trip, Gord inquired of Curly Greenleaf as to the mode of transportation. After all, as Curly himself had said on more than one occasion, druids had a means of moving about that took only minutes and covered hundreds of leagues. There is more to life than earth, tree, and sun, and if you will pardon the blasphemy, exclaimed the druid, we do have such ways and means, but druids are human, or partially so in cases such as myself, and we enjoy good company too. Break. Now, that'd be about 15 days travel, and so, yeah, you know, I would say on horseback, given good terrain, that is pretty much what the travel time should be, about 15 days from Innspa to Relmord. At the Darnlene level, we're not seeing major roads, but I would just imagine Innspa being such a place for pilgrims to come, and Relmord being the capital, I'd imagine there would be a very good road from Relmord directly to Innspa. And here, you know, it's pointed out that Elven Chain, if we jump back, is a very underrated magic item, as it's, you know, it's plus one chain armor, and with no, it can be hidden. So there's a direct benefit, but there's also the benefit of not showing your armor. So there's role-playing benefits to having the Elven Chain as well.
It's much harder to get than normal chain.
It should be. It definitely should be. I mean, I think, you know, it's kind of a Tolkienism, you know, is the whole question of the Elven equipment. I see it as really derived from, you know, The Hobbit and The Lord of the Rings, and that the idea of this magical equipment and cloaks, especially, you know, if you remember in Lord of the Rings, they're given the cloaks where they blend in so much with the surroundings that,
they leave Lothlorien.
Yes, and Aragorn, Legolas, and Gimli are running across the plains of Rohan, and they're almost undetectable to the riders because they blend so in so well. So, and there's a lot of things about those at unless you're really flooding the game with magical items, they are quite a nice magic item to get at the beginning of mid-level and partway through that kind of leveling. I've seen a lot of games that they really like throwing out the magic items very early on. All right. I'm going to restart right here. It is page 282, third paragraph. Both of the younger adventurers had to agree to that, as they found the journey most enjoyable traveling, as they were in company. Eventually, the four came to the great capital of Nyrond, and outside its walls, Curly Greenleaf parted from his friends. He had little love for and no interest in the doings of such places of buildings and folk not attuned to nature. He said he would visit a few small places nearby, where the druidical beliefs were still honored, and thereafter use his powers to go swiftly on to the Celadon. He said he would leave word at Woodwitch as to his whereabouts, just in case anyone wanted to look him up later, and with that he left. A break. All right, so there is comment here about Curly Greenleaf as a druid being able to travel great distances, in using druidical magic. And at 10th level, You know, Geller would be casting, you know, reasonably powerful magical spells, or summoning, you know, through nature these various abilities, magical. Well, there are clerical spells. So,
and druids can shape change. So, if he took the form of a bird, he could go very fast.
Yes, and is there in first level a kind of transportation spell like Gygax is describing? I'm not big on too much druidical magical knowledge, so it's not ringing a bell. There is kind of something about you know, some kind of fast travel through plants or something, you know, but I'm not really sure, and I'm not sure it's in the first you know, the first edition player's handbook. You know, if there is a druidical spell that matches this. So this, in a short time, is the second time, and maybe the third time overall, that Curly has mentioned being able to travel very quickly through druidical means. All right, so here they are. They've now reached the outside of Realmord, and I'm not sure of the location of Woodwitch, but I assume it's somewhere, you know, it's a town or city in Nyrond. All right. I'm going to restart. It's page 282, and it's the fourth paragraph. Geller brought Gordon Chert to the Nyrondal royal court, where they had an audience with King Archibald. While Geller was for some reason not mentioned, Gord and Chert were feted properly. Although Geller never volunteered the information, and Gord never asked, the young thief presumed that Geller's value to the king as a diplomat and intermediary would have been seriously compromised if Geller had been included in the group of celebrities. Anonymity was an ally of one such as Geller, but Gordon Chert did not need to wear the same cloak. The celebrated and handsome pair of heroes from the great battle in the Andri became desirable guests for the season, and they found themselves responding to a round of invitations to villas and nearby castles that didn't play itself out until sunset was past, and the last chill of Fireseek month was giving way to the sun's growing warmth. All right, break. There's Woodwitch. We're seeing the thing. Woodwitch is on the border of the Celadon inside the kingdom of Nyrond. Again, almost in a direct westerly line from Realmord. And so there's almost a direct line from Woodwitch to Realmord to cross over to Inspa. Now, we're not seeing, you know, on this level of the map with the Darlene's map, a lot of things being mentioned here, because we have them talking about Gord and Geller, Gord and Chert visiting castles and villas around Realmord. Now, one of the things that I find interesting is we really don't see too many castles being illustrated in, you know, talk of them in the original setting. Now, later on, there are more references to castles, but surprisingly, they are not, you know, they're not something that is talked about as regular encounters. One of the things I found very interesting here is there were several weeks, you know, they went up and Geller visited. They visited Archibald up in where he was in Nyrond. So pretty much it takes about 2 weeks travel to get from Inspa to Realmord. So from Nurl to Realmord has to be, you know, a little more time. And I'm interested that in the time period, Archibald has now left Dunstan's castle and come back to Realmord. So whatever he wanted to do, he set in motion in a very short period of time. Because, you know, there's a couple weeks where, or a week or so, where Geller is gone comes back to Stockersthorpe, and then they take off, and it takes them 15 days or a fortnight to make their way over to Relmord from Inspa. So within that time, Archibald has left with his a retinue, and perhaps he's left a part of that army behind that he took with him, because the idea was that he would go up, make sure that Dunstan and, you know, Count Blamu stayed in line and didn't think about, you know, leaving his vassalage to Archibald, and then build a series of fortifications up there. So that was a very quick trip. And with the whole army returning, that would be a much longer trip. And I'm just assuming by what is written here that it would make more sense that Archibald would return and leave part of the army behind, at the very least, to you know, keep a check on Dunstan, and also to start the building of the various fortifications. We got a little information here about the months and of the time passing, because obviously they it seems like they've arrived in Relmord during the month of Sunseb, and then they're still there at the end of Fireseek. So, you know, we have in the setting material all the named months, so we can figure out how much time they've been staying in Relmord, which isn't always given. Time passes in the story, and there's not always a check mark to say how much time has passed. All right, so, you know, we're given a little campaign information about travel times, travel by horseback, travel by... you know, the Archibald traveling, the distances, and so, it can be measured out, because nicely the Darlene map is in hexes. And so by this terrain, which is shown as mostly open, it's not shown as wooded or hilly or swampy from Inspa to Relmord, we can kind of figure out then travel times that are going to be necessary by horseback to get from place to place, as shown on the Darlene map. And that is always very handy. All right. I'm going to restart. It is page number 282 and the final paragraph. When eventually they were no longer novelties for festive display, and the ladies of the court had begun to seek elsewhere for swains, the two were actually glad. It was an exhausting business, this sophisticated routine of banquets, parties, lovemaking, and intrigue. The barbarian was particularly disgusted with what he referred to as foppery and frippery, stating flatly that this was the reason that his sort were destined to inherit the world. The decadence and soft living of city and town, he proclaimed, would eventually cause the downfall of what these people called civilization, and then true folk would rule a cleaner and more simple earth, in which real virtues would be recognized. While Gord wasn't ready to agree with his friend as to the merits of what the barbarian held as virtues, Gord wasn't so certain that the fellow's predictions about the downfall of the society of kingdom and state would not eventuate. Despite all of his predictions and remonstrances against the lifestyle of Relmord, Chert, and Gord too for that matter, did enjoy the time, attention, and ministrations of the lovely but fickle ladies of the city. When in due course they were ready to leave, Chert was indifferent as to where they would travel, but Gord decided that he had seen enough of the East to last him for at least some time. The two agreed to head westward toward Woodwich and see if they could pick up some news of Curly Greenleaf. They had known for some time that when they wanted to embark, they would do so without Geller, for he was involved in more of his own mysterious dealings, and his responsibilities would take him elsewhere. Geller gave them his wishes for safe and profitable wayfaring, as well as a map of the territory in which they planned to adventure. Thus equipped, Gorn and his great-sized friend set forth again as the month of Cold Even ended and Growfest was being celebrated. Break. All right, so we have a little philosophy coming from Chert, which is nice because that is something that Gygax tries to do, is that he tries to show the world from various points of view. You know, we see a lot from Geller's point of view. We see things. We've heard Curly Greenleaf's philosophy. We've heard Chert's, philosophy and the way the outlook from a barbarian. And, we've always seen a lot of things from Gord's perspective. So we're not really seeing a lot of things in an omnipotent viewpoint where what is said in the narrative is true. We're being told quite a bit of what the opinion of is, of what Gord sees, and he may be mistaken, that these are unreliable narrators. So it makes things more interesting. It leaves things more open. And I really like that about the early Greyhawk campaign, and I like that about Gygax's writing in these novels. We are given again a period of time that basically they arrive at Sunseb, and then by the time they're leaving, the month of Cold Even is ended and Growfest is being celebrated. So it's basically like the spring has come and they're headed off for Woodwitch. Now, one item that I find interesting and is that Geller gives them a map, and and that is a wilderness map, and that reveals a certain level of technology. Map making, has been around for a while, but it wasn't always, it wasn't always prevalent. Here it's noted that jumping back to Curly and talking about him traveling a distance is that there is a 6-level druidical spell called Transport via Plants. And I'm going to kind of guess there that is the magic of quick travel for druids is being talked about right there by Curly Greenleaf when he says, he has druidical means to travel very quickly.
It's not, they don't talk about it in the spell in the Arcana, though. Like, there's no spell description.
Well, I have to like that. I mean, there's some spells that I really think should be role-played, and a lot of spells, they are ill-defined for their effects, like the light spell, which can be a tremendous spell if you could cast it on somebody's eyes. And also, if it was, in my belief, if the light spell should be used rarely rather than commonly, especially the permanent one, because when they get to that permanent light, then you would have those, light stones and artifacts that emit light all over the place because they'd be so useful. And if they were easy to do and not costly, then, you would kind of change the part of, you'd be doing more of a game with a lot of magical technology then. And I really think Greyhawk as a setting does best as fantasy Middle Ages with, certain things that because of magic doesn't necessarily match up one for one. And we have various items that could be from, the 17th, 18th century, even the 19th, and other things that are from the Renaissance. And yet the overall feel is more Middle Ages than, Renaissance. And definitely not the kind of thing where we're going to have magical trains and flying machines. What I see as the regular, as the regular technology, but Greyhawk is certainly open to any interpretation. And if you want to play the Greyhawk setting with a steampunk, or you want to do it with even modern technology and guns, that is as much a Greyhawk campaign as any other. And that is what's wonderful about the original material, is it is made, it's do-it-yourself, and it is made for the DM to make their own. Whereas the later material had this sequential, you know, everything happened, the years passed, and there were these events, and there was a lot of detail, and it made it more difficult to take that detail and alter it to exactly what you wanted. Whereas the earlier material was so bare bones that you had to create just to run the campaign. All right, so we have a 5e description up here of transport via plants. And what it says is it creates a magical link between large or larger inanimate plants within range and another plant at any distance on the same plane of existence. You must have seen or touched the destination plant at least once. My, 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 that is a monstrously powerful spell.
Yeah, I mean, it's very powerful, overpowered, really.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that means then that you're going to be able to, wow, that.
Like you could go back to your home village from anywhere in the world.
Yeah, I mean, you could go, and I right here it doesn't say if you can take anybody with you, but you could go on an adventure, I mean, anywhere, and bring the plant with you, you know, and, you know, just transport back to, like, you could be up in the land of black ice with the plant, you know, taken with the druid, touch it, and then be in the city of Greyhawk instantaneously. Now, it doesn't talk about what you, if you can take anyone with you or any items with you, but that is a kind of World of Warcraft kind of thing right there. Yeah. Where you can you know, disappear from one location and arrive back at you know, a select inn anywhere within the realms. That is,
it's close, you know, to a gate spell.
Yeah, I would not. Oh, that is a major spell. And, you know, when you got to the upper levels, you know, the higher level spells in AD&D first edition, there was a very big problem with balance, in that, some of the spells that were listed as very high level, they weren't doing this, they weren't as powerful as some lower level spells. So, you know, I really thought some of the things really showed. And then a lot of the spells, there were very few, you know, very high-level spells. But I, you know, you could explain them through role-playing, but if you tried to look at them as a power, you know, level of power, there were some very high-level spells that just seemed underpowered, and some mid-level spells that seemed massively overpowered. And this, that much travel, I'm not a big fan of teleportation spells and such, and this really is a super powerful spell.
Oh, I found one in the second edition, if you want me to post it.
Oh, no, I think this is good. I think we have a general idea, even if it's more limited, that this kind of speaks to what Gygax is having Curly talk about.
Okay.
All right. Let's see. Where was I? I'm on page 283, and it is the second to last paragraph. Both young men marveled greatly over the high bridge which spanned the Duntide River just below Rel Mord. The way to Woodwich was rather uneventful after that. Both had traveled much in recent months, and familiarity with such a process made the simple matter of going from one place to another less than thrilling. Going as they were through the central portions of the kingdom, there wasn't even the excitement of an encounter with marauder or monster to enliven things. They did run across some highwaymen, and that brief action broke the monotony, But the brigands soon fled, feeling that the loss of a half score of their number was sufficient justification for the decision not to press the pair further. All right, break. All right, so we've just have Chert and Gord right now traveling. And so they're at a point when, you know, they're able to kill 10 brigands on their own and drive the rest off. And, you know, so that immediately shows that they are, you know, their strength has now, and ability has now risen in game terms to be very high. And if you kind of remember, there was a cable television series called Rome, where there is an example there where the two legionnaires encounter a group of Celts and or Gauls, and they just slaughter them. You know, it's just the two of them, but they're such experienced and strong warriors that really these you know, these more barbarian style fighters and brigands don't stand a chance against them. And you know, so the idea of you know, the individuals who are you know, much better trained and better fighters by an extreme like that, that goes on in even general fiction outside of gaming. So, you know, in a story like this, it is not unrealistic too much for them to be able to take on a big group of brigands and come out victorious in the story. But it is still pushing things outside of, you know, 20 men against two, even if they're the two are highly skilled in real earth, you know, reality. That should be just, you know, too many men for two men to take on by themselves, you know, with sword and stuff. But, you know, I mean, that has always been part of popular fiction, whether it's historical fiction or like Cyrano de Bergerac, and or whether it is fantasy fiction and Conan, that, you know, one individual has this great strength. And so in fantasy work or in, you know, more historical kind of fantasy work, that we do see this. So it is not, I find it a little bit out of the bounds of if he were just doing storytelling and into making it make sense in AD&D terms. All right. I'm going to restart. It's page number 283 and the final paragraph. Soon Gord and Chert came to Woodwich, and there they sought out the chapel of Farlang. There Geller had told them was the place in that town where their friend Curly Greenleaf would have leave word as to his whereabouts, whether near or far. Later both Gord and Chert would look back upon their arrival at the chapel as the beginning of their next great adventure together. Break. It is page 284 and the end of chapter 26. You know, and here of note in the story, this is the end of one sequence and the beginning of another, and it's told to us directly. And then in Woodwich, there it's described as a town, but and it has a chapel of Farlangen, who is what the Far Traveler. I forget what his sobriquet is. yeah, and it's noted here that Egg really seems to like druids. Druids and thieves and barbarians. So, you know, he's not going the direct route here with, you know, magic users and paladins and warriors. You know, he's really covering some of, you know, some of the less used. You know, druids have certain limitations. They do better in wilderness than in dungeons. And so in a lot of adventuring groups, it's more rare to encounter a druid than a magic user or a regular cleric who has better, in AD&D, has better healing. And that this book is written for AD&D, the physics around AD&D, that is definite. You know, this is 1985. When this book came out, and this is definitely talking in terms that we know So as far as lore, it's nice to know that we can place the chapel of Farlang in right here in Woodwich. It talks about then to Woodwich being having more of the old faith kind of druidism being prevalent here, and also probably, you know, like here we are in Nyrhon, but still we see that you know, there is still Flann influences, god of horizons, distance travel, and roads. Yeah. All right, we're getting close to the end, but we are right on top of chapter 27. So I'm going to begin here on page 285, chapter 27, the first paragraph. Greenleaf had last been at the chapel only a few days before. The brown-robed clerics who tended the place informed the two newly arrived travelers. After Gord and Chert provided sufficient proof of their identities and their past relationship with Curly, one of the priests went off to fetch the message that the druid had entrusted to the keeping of Farlangan's servants before going on his way. To pass the time while he waited, Gord inquired as to the nature of the deity served by these friendly clerics. He and Chert were not surprised to learn that Farlangan was an earthy sort, one venerated by travelers and wanderers, the deity of adventurers who held views not dissimilar to the ethos expressed by druidical faith, if not quite so bound up with nature. In fact, the curate told them, not a few of both adhered to the tenets with equal respect, so there were druidical followers of Farlangan, and some of Farlangan's servants who were of a druidical sort. A confusing concept at first, the cleric admitted as he noticed Gord and Chert shaking their heads, but not really so hard to grasp when both ethoi were known and understood. Break. So here we have, you know, a little description here of the relationship of Farlangan and nature and the druids, and how he is... And it's asked, is Curly a follower of Farlangan or simply a friend? It hasn't said directly, but it has, he has expressed his viewpoint on neutrality. And I think the implication is that he is just friendly with Farlangan and its clerics in Woodwich. But it isn't really a, he's a druid, I don't think he's a druid follower of Farlangan, but that's a guess. Now, one thing that, you know, isn't mentioned, and I've seen a lot of different viewpoints on this, is the idea that the all the deities are worshipped in the same way. And I really don't think that's true. I think that the Pale has one way of worshiping, who is it, Foltis. And I think that we can only assume that within this town, that these clerics and maybe members of their order within Nyrhon or within maybe the borders around here, worship Farlangan in the way expressed. Because I really see it more likely that there isn't like one church of one belief in the Farlangan, or one belief in Neril, and one belief. I think that there's variation, that there's plenty of sub-religions, differing religions on the same deity. And as long as they follow certain tenets and aren't too extremely outside of those, I would seem that they're all okay to the deity. You know, and therefore, we get things like Istis, who's a Baclunish deity, who is commonly known in the East, and in the Flaness. And, you know, you would assume has followers who are not Baclunish, you know, maybe even clergy who are not Baclunish, following a version of Istis that would be distant, different than, say, you'd find in Ekber. One of the, you know, the coastal Baclunish countries. And you might find a different version of worship of Istis in Ekber and Al and Ket and various places that are backlunish or backlunish dominated, you know, and you might have areas where Istis isn't venerated in the backlunish West at all. Like in my own campaign, Zeif practically has its own pantheon, you know, and Istis isn't really a general part of the Zeifian worship. So, you know, in my opinion, that you would have that Curly isn't, you know, a follower, but is a friend of Farlang and its clergy. It's not necessarily true that he would be a friend to all the different places. Like, he might not be friends to the clergy and the yeomanry or in Verbabank, or, you know, there might be variations where, you know, Curly would disagree with, you know, how Farlangen is being followed. All we really can say is what we're directly presented with, unless you assume that Farlangen is worshipped exactly the same way in every nation within the Flaness, outside of, you know, particularly evil ones like the Horn Society, Uz, the Lands of Uz, but that wherever you find Farlangen, they all agree. I really don't, that's not my style of game, and I don't think it's ever put down that that's the way the campaign works for Gygax. We've got a little bit of time left, and I'm going to restart here. It is page 285, the final paragraph. The priest returned with a scroll bearing a seal showing a circle of 8 leaves and presented it to Gord. He tucked it into his belt pouch, correctly sensing and quietly conveying to Chert that it would be highly impolite to examine the message. While they were being entertained by clerics of the chapel, the conversation grew sufficiently interesting to both men to cause them to accept an invitation to join the clerics for the noon meal. Suppressing their curiosity about Curly's message, they enjoyed a good repast in the small refectory of the chapel and were treated to a rather unexciting description of the pantheology of the area. From what Gord heard, it seemed pretty much identical to that of other places he had been. Chert was obviously as bored as his companion, but then the patriarch turned and talked to his deity once again, and this was more to the taste of the two adventurous travelers. Break. All right, so, you know, Gygax kind of proves me wrong there. Yeah, it's just about 7 o'clock here. I just touch on one or two points. That Gygax, you know, immediately says that Gord, from Gord's viewpoint, it does seem like say, the worship of Farlan and some of the other deities seem similar here in Nyrond as he's encountered in other locales. And the last thing is the business of the message from Curly bearing bearing a seal showing a circle of 8 leaves. And what that represents is that Curly is reached the 8th circle in Druidism, which is, in AD&D terms, he is a 10th level Druid. And context there, within the AD&D game, there is one Grand Druid who is 14th level. So as a 10th level Druid, Curly Greenleaf is very high level. You know, the AD&E first edition was not a super high level game. And at 10th level, he is a very, very powerful figure, in the setting. All right. Well, we've reached just about 7 o'clock. So, Chris, my co-host, had to go. I think I'm going to end it right here. It'll be ticking over. And so this was recording number 38. It's done on July 19th. And I'm leaving here, breaking here on page number 286. I'm going to be continuing tomorrow, and I hope people can join me there. Then I'm going to call up Craig, our recording bot, and say goodnight for tonight. See you.